welcome Rory Graves from the season author who wrote the book Haunted Racine, an award-winning author, because at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Awards back in May, amongst, what, how many hundreds of stations in the state of Wisconsin, radio stations, this show won first place for an interview, and it was your interview you made with us last year.
I am just floored that that won first place.
Now, it's not like an Academy Award where you're going to get that role based on it.
Oh, but yeah.
I showed it to you. It's in the lobby. First place interview, Rory Graves, Haunted Racine. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of that.
Because you think about all the radio stations that entered, and they said, oh, we got to get her to get the award next year. Anyway, so the book is Haunted Racine. The cover alone is spooky. Now, tell us what's on the cover, then I'll tell you why I'm bringing that up.
So on the cover is Winslow Elementary School, which used to be known as the Third Ward School. It's near the lake. And Winslow Elementary is rumored to be haunted because most of the building was built over an old graveyard, Racine's first graveyard.
Is it really?
Yep. They just called it the Old Cemetery.
Well, that's creepy.
I know, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the biggest issues with that build was the fact that they had to exhume the bodies. And when they did, it's evident that they never got all of them because they still found bones in the schoolyard.
Now, did the kids find them?
The kids found them during recess.
What years are we talking about?
Probably the, I believe, 1880s, 1890s most of the...
Imagine a kid coming to show and tell, hey, I found this in the front yard. It's a big femur bone. I mean,
yeah,
a femur. Yeah. Now I pass that every morning on the way in. It's on 14th Street, right? If you pass St. Luke's, it's right after that when you're heading toward west. You'll see it there. And every morning I look. I passed it every morning for years. I never thought much about it. And now I look for that light. Now, that light was not on when you took the picture.
No, that was added in post.
Yeah, but I still look for it every morning to see if that's on there. So kids were finding femur bones and everything just in that. Oh, that's like the movie Poltergeist.
Yeah, that's exactly what it reminds me of.
Moved the tombstones, but they didn't remove the bodies. Yeah.
And that's super common in a lot of old historic cemetery sites where they never got to all of the bodies.
Now, I just went to, about a week ago, I went to a speaking thing in Union Grove. They had a thing on the Pioneer Cemetery, which was at the Bong Recreation Center, where it is, Bobong is now.
Oh, wow.
And they, before they can build the runways and everything, it was supposed to be a big Air Force base. It never happened, though. Before they had to remove this cemetery. Now, this cemetery was built in the mid-1800s. Wow. Because locals that lived there, they didn't ship the bodies out 20 miles. They died, you buried right there in between the farms. And so they had to move these bodies. And there were, I think, 19 or 20 of them, something like that. And they had to find homes for these bodies. You can just dump them. So they had to dig each one up. And I was talking to the woman who was giving the talk, and I said, now, they didn't have caskets like they do today that are pretty sturdy. These were just wood boxes they put, and there was no embalming. I said, when they dug these up, I mean, they had it just a crumble. And they said they had people do what they hired, were very careful on how they removed these bodies. Most of them were put at Forest Home Cemetery in Milwaukee. They found a spot for them there. But they got to get rid of these bodies. Now, the spot... there's no markers where it was. She mentioned where it was right off there, where the runway is in the bushes. But that's kind of creepy, just having to get those bodies out of there.
I can't imagine. And Winslow was just one of the places within a mile. There were two cemeteries. One was right on the bluffs of Lake Michigan. And the same thing happened there where they didn't actually want to build there, but they needed to exhume the bodies because the cemetery fell into disrepair. Most of them went to Mound Cemetery, but there were still some left behind, and every so often they would just fall into the lake because of lakeside erosion, or the boys at Racine College, you know, elementary, middle school boys, would find those coffins jutting out of the side of the
Who built a cemetery on the bluff where waves can go? Who came up with that idea? Even I know that's not a place to build a it's not a place to build a house, yet a cemetery.
Honestly, I can't imagine how much more of how much more land used to be there that isn't anymore, because it had to have been significant for this much erosion to take. Now there's like maybe 10, 15 feet of land and then the lake.
Well, I looked up to see the difference between a coffin and a casket.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hear people say both of them, and somebody said, well, they're not the same thing. From what I understand, the casket is like what we see, the big rectangle boxes. Mm-hmm. But a coffin is shaped more like it comes down like a body.
Yeah.
Where you can actually, and you see them in the Old West. They used to put these people up and like open the casket or the coffins and put them on display, these outlaws that were killed. They used to display them. And in the movie Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood, Morgan mm-hmm. Freeman is on display after he's killed. And that's what starts Clint Eastwood on his murder spree to get these people who did this to his friend. But yeah, they put him on display. And I've seen pictures back in the 1800s, early 1900s. If a person in your family died, they used to dress them up and they used to wire them so they looked alive. And they used to take a family portrait, one more family portrait with the person. And they were dead, but they didn't look dead. Same thing with outlaws. They used to take pictures with them, and they just wired them up so they looked like they were alive. Put them in nice clothes. Kind of gruesome when you think about it, but you see those pictures all the time.
Have you ever heard of Elmer McCurdy?
No. I hope I never... I'm not going to meet this person, am I?
No, okay. I sure hope not. This is not a Racine-based story, but your mention of outlaws reminded me. There actually was a man, Elmer McCurdy, who was a bank robber, and nobody ever claimed his body after he went to the morgue. And so the embalmer embalmed him as he would any other and put him on display in his window for a while. And
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he had people pay to see Elmer McCurdy, the big outlaw. He wasn't actually that big of an outlaw. And they would put coins in his mouth to pay their admission.
They used to take bodies and put them in sideshows. Famous, mm-hmm. you know, what famous they would buy their bodies and bring them around like a traveling sideshow.
And funny enough, that's exactly what happened. Two gentlemen came and claimed to be his relatives. And the embalmer let them released the body to them. They were actually part of the circus, so they took his body around to the circuses. And years upon years passed, ownership of this passed. Nobody remembered it was a real body anymore. And he actually ended up being used as a prop in a haunted house. And that's where they discovered him when they were filming the $6 Million Man.
Really?
Yep. They were filming an episode there, and they wanted to move one of the props out of the way, the hanging man. And when they were filming, they tried to move him, and his arm fell off, and they saw ligaments on the inside. And they were like, oh, mannequins don't have muscles on the inside. So the police had to come, and it took a long time to figure out where this body came from, because it had moved hands so many times, but it was Elmer McCurdy from the Wild West.
Well, I guess he lived a good life after he died anyway. He's useful life anyway.
Absolutely.
Robbing banks. Whoa. We're talking to Rory Graves here from Haunted Racine. We've got some Haunted Racine stories to talk about, too, coming up in just a few minutes here, including the Taylor Orphanage, which mm-hmm. I just went to about 2 weeks ago. I was there. And they wrote a book about the Taylor Orphanage. It was Under the Tarzan Tree, or the Tarzan mm-hmm. Tree, which my wife and I read. And
that's
it kind of
a
opened
great
our
book.
Yeah, it opened our eyes to just the treasures in the Racine area.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a bell in front of the Taylor Orphanage now. It's on display. It's the original bell from the original orphanage. That is owned, it's on loan by a good friend of ours who's in here every month, Jim Messier.
Yes, I love Jim. He's fantastic.
He's in here every month, and it said on loan. Notice he didn't donate it. It says on loan, which means when the minute he wants it back, he gets it back. That's good. We're talking to Rory Graves, and she wrote the book Haunted Racine. Let's talk about some of the Racine haunts around here. And one of them I brought up only because I was just there a few weeks ago and read the book Under the Tarzan Tree or something like that. It's about the Taylor Orphanage on Taylor Avenue, right off Highway 11. You could see there. The building is still there, most of it anyway. And there's a big plaque, giant concrete.
Yeah, it's
memorial
massive.
Out front, yeah. So let's talk about that, because there's got to be stories with an orphanage.
Oh, yes, lots of stories. This is one of the few locations where I actually got to go on a paranormal investigation with a team to the Taylor Home Orphanage Asylum. And that was the Milwaukee Paranormal Investigators. And we went, I want to say it was about 2018, and investigated cottage number 5, which is one of the, I think there's 6 cottages on the property, kind of in a semicircle.
Yeah, these community organizations use them now.
Yeah. And at that time, Evergreen Academy was using it for the lower grades, for elementary. And we went there after dark and did an investigation because a lot of the teachers were hearing things and seeing things occasionally after hours. And, you know, teachers stay late to work on their stuff. So there were a lot of spooky stories they had, most of them pertaining to the hallway. When you first walk in, you would go to the reception desk, and then directly to the left of the desk is this hallway. And there is nothing extraordinary about it. It's pretty short, but that's where most of the classrooms are off of. And at night, people would be staying late, and they would see, if their classroom door was shut, lights coming from underneath their doors. They would hear people running through the hallways and go out into the hall, only to see nobody. But the creepiest one to me is even sometimes at the reception desk, the receptionist would hear kids running through the hallway and laughing, and the sound of all those papers rustling on the wall. You know, kids' artwork, all the things you want to put up on the bulletin boards. But then she'd look over, all the papers were exactly still, and nobody would be there.
That would creep me out. I wouldn't go back in again.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be able to stay after hours, at least.
We had a story yesterday. The thing that creeps people out when they, you know, they're in a home, and noises, things moving, well, you know, the typical things. I put a for sale sign out in front of my house. The first time I saw something like that or heard something like, if I saw a cup and saucer moving across in the air, I wouldn't even stay there overnight. I'd go to the motel down the street, get a room. I don't care how crummy the motel is. It's got to be better than saucers and cups going through the air. I don't know how people put up with that.
Yeah.
Now, I showed you a picture in my bedroom of the ceiling. And one night I'm reading, and I look up at the ceiling, and I see this shadow. And it's a perfect shadow of a woman. You could see the long hair. You see her face. And it looks like she's looking up and praying or something like that. And my wife saw it too. I took a couple of pictures. I showed you the picture. Next night, it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And nothing changed in the room. I would say, well, it's a shadow from the curtain. That's not a shadow from the curtain. Look at it up there.
It is crazy.
It spooked me out.
Yeah, it 100% just looks like a person.
And my house is over 100 years old, 120 years old. So I don't know what went on in that house 120 years ago.
That's part of the reason I love doing historic research, is you get to dig on that stuff.
Let's, before we get to the first break here, let's talk about, you said the Taylor Home was an asylum as well?
They called it an orphan asylum.
Oof, I don't like that word, asylum.
It's definitely a thing of the past. It was just an orphanage, but that was how they referred to it.
Let's talk about the Racine County Asylum. Now, this was by where Regency Mall is, right?
Yep, right there.
Ugh.
So that was originally the Racine County Asylum for the Insane, as well as its later iteration, High Ridge Hospitals. And when it was the Insane Asylum, we don't know a lot about what happened there. It's one of those things, poor record keeping, things get lost. But we do know that I can't recall the year.
I got your book right here.
Yeah, I know, right? I should be referencing it. But we do know that there was a fire and that all of the patients made it out from that fire, which is remarkable. However, the records did not. They also, on the same property, built the Poor Farm, which was definitely something we wouldn't see nowadays, where people who were poor, infirm, sometimes just immigrants, would be sent, and they would kind of do labor until they were deemed fit to go back into society and fend for themselves. And
this is where Regency Mall is now.
Huh? Yeah.
Where Woodman's is now, yeah.
Yeah, Woodman's. It's crazy. There's finally something there. And between the Poor Farm and the asylum, people would die, and they had a cemetery on premises. And so that cemetery that you can still see to this day, I believe on...
It's just to the right of Target. Yeah, just to the right of Target, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the remnants of the cemetery they had.
Yeah, I've been there, and it's not a cemetery with tombstones like you would see. There's a marker there, one marker, and it's a pauper cemetery is what they call it. And it's just one, you know, all these graves, but they're not marked.
Yeah.
But, and so they can't build anything there because it's, you know, sacred ground. It's a cemetery.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been there before with my wife. We took a walk through this right by the soccer field, just south of the soccer field there. But you wouldn't know it from the road other than it's a big grassy area that no one's building on.
Exactly.
But it's just to the right of Target and just to the left of, Pershing Park there? Pritchard Park. Just there. And you can go there. Mm-hmm. It's just one marker that tells you what was there. But whoa.
Yeah. And if you thought two asylums were bad, there was three.
We're talking to Rory Graves. She is the author of Haunted Racine. And before the break, we were talking about some asylums. You got the Taylor Orphanage, Asylum and Orphanage. Oh, I hate that word, asylum. An orphanage. Then we talked about the one where Woodman's is now.
Mm-hmm.
And you said there was a third one. Racine was the city of asylums? What was going on here?
Sunnyrest, which is a really creepy name, in my opinion. They actually called it Sunnyrest Tuberculosis Sanatorium, which is just as bad as asylum. Those names just give you the chills. And they weren't as bad back then, but nowadays...
But that's where people went when they had tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
They rested it out, whatever they did. They got away, because it was highly contagious.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to these places, and they got out of it when they were all done.
Yep, as long as they survived. Which is unfortunate, because a lot of people did not survive tuberculosis, especially in the early days. This sanatorium opened up in November 1913. And was closed by 1962 when they kind of got that epidemic under control in the area. But that was a good chunk of time that it was open.
Where was it?
It was kind of like right behind the High Ridge Hospitals. So it was on that same property, most likely where part of Pritchard Park nowadays.
Because what on my list here was the High Ridge Shopping Center, which is where Kmart was. They had a Asian buffet there. I think Home Depot's in the area now, right around. So that's what we're talking about, that area?
Yep, all in the same chunk of land. All of that, which is just crazy to me.
Yes, because there's a little lake there, right, where Culver's is.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife told me the story. Now that it's come, now you mention it, that there was a home there, the rest home, was right there on the property where the shopping center is. Yeah, because she mentioned that to me. One day we're eating, you know, in the car at Culver's. I want to tell you about this place where the nuts hung out. What do you think? I'm eating lunch. What do you think? I don't want to hear about an asylum when I'm eating lunch. But it was right in front of that lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the stories they've got around there are great. Actually, Ron Helmick, founder of Racine Paranormal Investigators.
Yeah, I've had him in here, yeah.
Yeah, he used to work at that Kmart before it shut down, and he said things would fly off the shelves when nobody was around, and they would hear things crash and come around the corner and see nothing out of amiss. But some of the other employees also had experiences where Christmas music would just start blasting when they were closing down for the night. They had other incidences where carts would just start rolling around the area. It's crazy. I used to go there when I was a kid and go to the Little Caesars and get lunch.
Yeah, Little Caesars was in there. You know, here's the problem. I never see any of this stuff go on. And I talk to people who claim they have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm like, you know, the people from Missouri, you know what their slogan is? It's the show me state. When you, you know, I don't believe it. So show me. Mm-hmm. And that's when I believe something. Yeah, just show it to me. Let me see something go on. I don't know if I can handle it once I see it. I think I'll be in an asylum once I see it. But people swear these things go on.
Yeah.
And you look at them and they look to me like they're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't I see them? Like my sister-in-law. I'm going to tell this story. She speaks to the dead. She speaks to the dead. She can hear them. And one day she comes up, and I don't want to hear it. I tell her, I don't want to hear any of your stories because I don't believe this stuff. Just keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
And this is my first wife. And she, her sister comes up and says, I have to speak to Don right away. And he says, well, he didn't want to talk about this stuff. And he says, no, this is important. She says, I spoke to your aunt, but she said she's not really your aunt. And I said, aunt, but she's not. Uh-oh, I have an Aunt Lil,
mm-hmm.
aunt who passed away, but she was my grandmother's friend. We just called her Aunt Lil because she was always hanging around and, you know, she was part of the family, Aunt Lil. I said, now go on. She said, she is your guardian angel. And she said, something bad is going to happen, but don't panic and don't worry about it. It will all come out okay.
Wow.
And I said, can you tell me about it? She goes, she didn't tell me much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks later, something at this radio station I worked at, something really came down bad with one of the employees and accusations all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it was nothing. And she just, but anyway, it was people in the station were kind of upset about it because she was making these wild accusations against everybody. Not about me in particular, but about, you know, everybody in the building.
Yeah.
And nothing happened. She just drifted away and she went on the Home Shopping Network and hosted that for years. But nothing happened of it. And I told my boss this, and he said, I want to speak to this sister-in-law of yours
mm-hmm.
because everything she said really happened. Now, do I believe it? No. But to come up and say your aunt, who's not really your aunt,
mm-hmm.
came up with this story, and she said, something's going to happen, but don't worry, everything will work out. And it was, and after everything worked out, I said, you know, I'm going to tell you a story, Bill.
Yeah, after it worked out.
He said, well, I got to talk to you. I said, no, you're not talking to her. But she never gave readings for anybody in the family or children.
Mm-hmm.
No children, no family. And, but she said this one she had to talk to me about.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe it? No. Do I believe it's a coincidence? Yeah. But I don't know.
A heck of a coincidence, though.
What a coinkydink. All right, let's talk about some more haunted places in Racine that we can go to and see.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites is actually out in the county in Rochester. It's known as Chances. They're a supper club now.
I've been there so many times. I've eaten there.
Oh, fantastic food, right?
And that's been around since the horse and buggy age, that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They actually originally started as a boarding house and tavern. And this settler, Levi Godfrey, originally established it as a tavern and boarding house because it's pretty close to Highway 20. So this was a main thoroughfare for people traveling through Wisconsin before it even was a state. And they had a plank road that was about where Highway 20 is now. And because this was such a hot spot that people would stop, they had one of Wisconsin's first political conventions there. They called it Godfrey's Convention, and Gilbert Knapp, the founder of Racine, Wisconsin, was also there during that convention. But it is one of the oldest bars in the area, and there are 7 ghosts, supposedly, on premises. 7, which is crazy.
Now, I've been there, and the upstairs, you can't go upstairs, more of a storage area upstairs mm-hmm. above it, but you can see it. You can see it's old, and on the menu, they give the stories of this place, Chances. It's a great restaurant. I've been there a million times.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful restaurant and bar, and now I know things maybe I shouldn't know.
I actually did get a chance to go up to that second floor. And that's where they have their famed springboard ballroom floor.
Yes, yes.
Apparently, they can never host parties up there because you can just hear every footstep way too well downstairs. That the springboard was nice back in the day, but now it's kind of, you know, aged and everything gets really loud. But that also means when nobody is up there and they hear footsteps.
Uh-oh, who's dancing?
Who's dancing on the ballroom floor? And that might just be the lady in green. Supposedly, there is a woman in green who inhabits the second floor, who may have been a lady of the night, who was in love with a Civil War soldier who inhabits the first floor, and their two planes never cross.
We're scaring you out of your jammies this morning. We're talking to Rory Graves, author of Haunted Racine. By the way, where can people get this book? I've seen it in different places.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Historical Society sells it right over here.
Yeah. Yep. And also Racine Art Museum, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and some Walgreens around the area.
Oh, that's right. They do. They have a local book section there. Yeah, I've seen it there. There's a whole series of books for Wisconsin and so forth. Mm-hmm. And this was there, Haunted Racine. I did see it there. It's a great book. And it's an easy read, too. You go right, you know, goof around. You go right to the ghosts. Right.
Absolutely.
Where the haunted. You want to pick out a place?
Sure.
Pick out a place for me. Then I have some in case you want, but you pick out your place.
All right. So one of my favorite places, it's got to be the Bell City Opera House.
And where was that? Oh, I know where the opera. It's on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
I have a picture of it in my living room, a drawing we bought. It's right where Econoprint is now, I think. There's a parking lot there, an empty lot.
Oh, different opera house.
Oh, that's a different opera house?
Yeah.
Okay, then I don't have a picture of it.
Chapter 1. And actually, it's on 6th Street in College.
Okay.
So pretty close, stone's throw away, honestly. And it now is the building that used to have the YMCA and Red Cross Drug Company in it. So this one, when I went there, was still, they had Social on 6th, which was owned by Joan Rory, Perennial Soaps, Longshot Vinyl, and Roberta's. The businesses have changed up a little. I think Dragon Pit Barbecue is now occupying there. But this whole entire opera house burned to the ground in 1884, which was 2 years after it was built. And they still have no idea what caused the fire. Some people think it was intentional. Some people think it just happened because it was an old building. They had gas lamps. These sorts of things do happen. But it happened around midnight when two explosions rocked the building. And everyone came running to the opera house just to see people pouring out of the doors. It was a hotel above, so there were lots of people in their pajamas running away. And crazy enough, there were almost no casualties, despite the fact that it was a packed house. However, on the fourth floor, there was the servants' quarters, which the rafters caved in on almost immediately after this happened. It was the first area to get cut off from the rest of the hotel. And one housekeeper died during the fire. The other two people who supposedly died in the fire were a husband and wife acting team that had been doing the opera. And that was Jenny and Russell Glover. And those two, legend has it, although no one would actually know, that Jenny didn't want to go out in her night clothes, so she had to get dressed before she left the hotel. And that is supposedly why they both perished in the fire. But they did actually find their bodies a couple days later, and they were still embracing each other, just in the ruins of this opera house.
They're not still walking around there, are they?
Supposedly they are. And I know if you talk to the Over Our Head players at that 6th Street Theater.
Right, because I go there. Is that where it is?
They've got some stories.
Because we go there to see shows at the 6th Street Theater.
Oh, yeah. We just went to go see Lizzie there, and it was fantastic.
We saw Misery there.
Oh, that was another good. Excellent one.
The actress who played the lead there, she was so creepy. because she's supposed to be playing the Kathy Bates role. And at one point, I was sitting in the first row all the way to the side, and she made eye contact with me. And I went, ooh. I jumped. I said, ooh, don't look at me. There's stories, even in Chicago. Well, we saw Jersey Boys. I forget what the Oriental. I'm trying to remember the theater we saw it in. It used to be the Iroquois Theater.
Yeah.
And that burned to the ground, too. And hundreds of people. They lined the bodies of the alleyway with all the people because this was when fire laws weren't like they are today.
Oh, yeah.
And these people, during a performance, the curtain caught fire. And when that happened, it was just blazes everywhere. But the theater's still there today.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to believe there's stories with that Iroquois Theater.
I'm sure there are.
And then there was the Iroquois, I think it was the Iroquois boat that went over. Remember the one that overturned in Chicago? It had all the workers from General Electric.
Oh, yeah, I do recall.
I think that was called the I hope it wasn't called the Iroquois, because I'd never name anything Iroquois after that.
It's like a Titanic.
Yeah, that was the boat that flipped. And they had all the, because everybody went to go see something, and they went to one side of the ferry, and the ferry all flipped, and all the workers from General Electric, a lot of them were just, they were killed. The ferry ended on top of them. You looking them up?
Yeah, I was trying, but.
What's the name of that boat?
I can't find it.
Well, I thought it was Iroquois. I hope not. Is that I would never want to use that name for anything else. All right, we have time for one more. Give us a good story here in Racine. Now, we talked about this last time, but it's something people can relate to because they see it on Main Street, the Masonic Temple.
Yes, they're going to be...
Look at that smile that came on her face when I said Masonic Temple.
They're going to be doing a podcast called Haunted Racine there pretty soon, I think October 24th. So I'm looking forward to listening to that myself.
You did that with the Racine County Eye? Is that a different one?
Yeah, Racine County Eye is the one that's putting it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not involved, but I'm excited to listen to it.
Yeah, Denise is here all the time from Racine County Eye.
Yeah, Ron Helmick and Wendy Spencer, and she is the caretaker of the building. And when I went with her through the Masonic Temple for the research for this book, she had so many stories. Just stories upon stories.
Well, it's an old building. Mm-hmm. A lot went on there. And just the name Masonic Temple kind of gives you a feel.
Oh, yeah. And the inside is absolutely gorgeous.
We saw Mel Torme perform there. When they stopped using the Christmas House for Cancer for the performances, they used them there. And Mel Torme appeared on stage there. And this guy wrote the Christmas song and a lot of other songs. And he performed there in their theater at the Masonic Temple.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've seen like a circus performance that, just a photograph of circus performance on their stage. And their theater-like area, it's really cool. But they think that Henry Durand, along with a couple other people, most likely haunt this building. And one of the most interesting ones to me is Funston, who was the architect of the temple side of the Masonic Temple. And when Wendy was going through with a medium one day, the medium said that she could hear this man. He was a kind of toity guy and had a scrunched face. And she's like, he's mad. And Wendy said, why is this man mad? What's his name? She's like, I'm not sure, but he built this place. And he says you covered up his door. And Wendy was like, we have not covered any doors anywhere around here. And they racked their brains trying to think of it. And finally, she realized they covered a door on the bottom of the stage, just like a little trap door. And apparently, Funston was upset about that. And they believe his presence kind of just ramps up whenever they're making changes in the buildings. And he's just got this kind of oppressive, like, irritated energy. So he's one of my favorites.
Did they cover anything up?
Yeah, they covered a trap door on the stage when
they did? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, I believe they put carpet over it. And apparently he was mad about that. But Henry Durand, the other supposed haunt of the building, is known to be really friendly and protective. And he had a bunch of daughters. And so he is known to hang around with younger women and be protective over them. Just because He's like that dad figure.
And that's Durand Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Durand. Durand yep. Mansion. We heard about Durand.
And he also was in the Christmas House, too. So
the Christmas House for Cancer, which is right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful mansion.
It's gorgeous.
I think it was used for nurses at the hospital. They would stay there. It's like a rooming house for nurses and so forth. Is that what it's used for today? Do you know?
No. Today it's used as a venue. So it used to be a bed and breakfast, but now they do private parties and things like that.
Yeah. Beautiful mansion right there on the lake.
Yeah.
Gorgeous right on Main Street. Well, thank you for coming in again.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know if I can continue the next hour now. Because this building's not, the radio station's 100, just about 100 years old, but the building's not that old. But some of the places we used to broadcast. Thank you. Rory Graves, Haunted Racine. You want to get the book? You can get it at venues around, like the, you said the Art Museum, RAM?
Art Museum, Heritage Museum.
And bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
You get it online, too, if you want?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, everybody can get everything online.
Yeah, Amazon's got everything.
But go right to a local place and buy it. That's nice, too. Thank you, Rory.
Thank you.
And thanks for helping us win that award. I do appreciate it. We got our big first place award from the Wisconsin Broadcasters, thanks to Rory. Thank you, Rory Graves.